to talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem, and we're going to be here for just a little while, and I'm going to turn up my headphones just a tad. You wouldn't believe the stressful morning I've had.
I know. It's always something.
It is. But it Gil just waves his magic wand,
yep,
and we are done. Folks, when we do remote broadcasts, we're dependent on some really high technology stuff. And so this morning when I call into the station to say, handshake, hi, how are you? Do you hear me? There's nothing there. So we get Gil involved, and he's our engineer. He's the one that is 90% responsible for the really good parts of our show.
Mm-hmm.
Renee is responsible for the bad parts.
90% or
no, the other 10%.
Oh, okay.
So I'm not responsible for anything. But nevertheless, mm-hmm, we're here for 2 hours, and if you'd like to call us, 602-508-0960. We're talking about cars, car repair problems, and stuff like that. Remind me, I got two emails that were unusual,
okay,
but and they're difficult to answer, and I wish they would have left their phone number on their email, because I'd call them back, because I have so many questions about, you know, what are we trying to accomplish.
Yeah. So and we already know you can't type, that's why you like the phone.
Oh,
no, I know.
You got that right.
One question leads to another, and then you find out more information that you need.
I can have a 20-email exchange, and it can go on all day, all week long.
Right.
It's kind of like I have a guy that called me or that sent me an email, and he's got an old car, and he's, what do I do with the timing? What do I do this? This is how I did it. But I don't really know what we're dealing with.
Why he's doing it?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what we're chasing.
Mm-hmm.
But then he tells me that he's running 20 or 40 degrees of timing, and it shouldn't run at 20 to 40 degrees timing. It shouldn't run.
It's way too much.
Oh,
right?
Just way too much. So, and then is he testing the timing? Is he testing where the timing's at when the motor's idling, or when he's driving down the road with his foot on the throttle? Most people don't do it that way, but sometimes the old guys used to do it that way.
Okay.
So,
how do you test that when you're driving down the road like that on the old cars?
It's difficult. It's difficult, The old cars have a mechanical advance and a vacuum advance, so you can bring the idle up outside the car, and then you can apply vacuum and free up the mechanical and see what kind of total timing you get. But you're really not going to get total timing unless you can floorboard it and stand there for, you know, 5 seconds.
Okay.
And chances are most guys aren't going to do that to a hot rod motor.
Mm-hmm.
So I just don't know where we're going, but I'm going to send him an email back. And so emails are easy, mark@marksalem.com. My website's marksalem.com. If you have any questions on generic stuff, if you'd go to marksalem.com and do your FAQs, look
right
through the FAQs, and you can use a Google search bar there. So if you have oil leak, you can search the word oil leak and stuff like that. Oh, we've got a caller. Let's go to the phones because Bob is first. Bob, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning, Renee. Good morning, Mark. 1985 Chevrolet El Camino, 305 automatic, just a basic driver, 68,000 miles, sweet little car. But here's my two problems.
Okay.
How do I repair seatbelt retractors that are totally out? And the other one is, all of a sudden, I'm not getting any air out of any of the vents.
Okay. Are all the seatbelt retractors bad or just one?
Yes, both of them. There's only two, and they're both bad.
Okay. Have you taken them apart yet?
No, I was going to wait for your advice.
Okay. Well, I know what I would do is the first thing I'd do is I would call both a dealer and a junkyard and say to them, look up my seatbelt retractor for my 85 El Camino, and tell me what broad years that retractor works for. Now, under the best of conditions, they're going to say, oh, well, that's from 82 to 90 or something like that. So
uh-huh,
it's going to give you a big spread. Then I would probably take one of them apart because what do you got to lose at this point? As
That's
long as
right,
you know
it's
you can
working
get one. And I'd go in there. You can't believe the amount of French fries and stuff that we found in seatbelt retractors. And we know that our success rates probably run in 60-70% because the guys are not scared to take them apart, figure out what's the matter with them, and grease them up, blow them out, get the soda pop, get the beer, get the socks, all that stuff out of there, and clean it up and get it to and go back in and out. So I think you're going to be able to find a new one, but I think that once you get the year spread and the color, then I think you can go into the wrecking yard arena and say, hey, I'm looking for a couple of retractors for an El Camino. Now, that could be a Malibu front seat, too. So you can find out once you get the part number what the application really is. So if a guy goes, well, I don't have an El Camino here, but I got a Malibu, well, if they're both gray and you've already looked it up, you go, oh, yeah, those will work. Thank you. So that's how
sounds
I would
good.
Do it.
Well, will do.
On the air conditioning issue of there's three places air can go. It's dash up on the windshield, then the center vents, which is the dash, and then the floor. I'm thinking it has to come from somewhere. So it's you need to kind of find it. But there's a vacuum line underneath the hood that goes to the passenger side or the center of the firewall. And it may go to a big round grapefruit-looking pod. From there, it goes into the dash, through the firewall, into the dash, to the mode switch, which then selects what we called windshield or defrost, center vent, or floor.
I'm with you. Okay.
And so let's make sure we have vacuum first, because that's the number one reason we lose everything. But I want you to check physically. Run the blower up to high and stuff and find out where the air is at, because the default is the defrost. And
okay.
Most of the time you'll stick your hand up and go, oh, well, there's the doggone air. And then that means it's default. That means we don't have vacuum. It could be the mode switch on your air conditioning panel, or it could be just the absence of a supply of vacuum.
Okay.
All right.
Got it. Thank you, Mark. Good day.
You're more than welcome. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Hang on just a second because I got a caller, but I've got to take care of this first. Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing has been in Mesa since 1970. He's a second-generation auto repair shop in Mesa. He comes from two families, the Vivian family and the Thompson family. And there was a Vivian boy and a Thompson boy that had some great garages that I respected back in 68, 70, 72. These guys were good. They were really the best. But with all due respect, the cars they worked on back in the 70s aren't like the cars we work on today. But they still did good, and they were the best. So Brian and Thelma own Thompson's Auto Repair in Mesa. It's the only shop that I put my name next to and say, hey, this is a great shop. They're going to treat you fair. All you have to do is meet Brian and Thelma, and you'll say, that's why Mark Salem likes them. They're on Main Street just east of Stapley on the south side of the road. There's a little construction for that train that goes down the center of the street, but they're still available, and they're still there. And if you want to call them, they'll meet you someplace and grab your car or something like that. So that's Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing, and that's on Main Street just east of Stapley on the south side of the road. And, Gil, who have we got next?
We have Lute.
Lute, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you very much.
First of all, let me compliment you for a couple of helps I received in the past within the last 2 months. And that was for my 1996 Plymouth Voyager. And the diagnosis you did, and I just followed it myself, it was right on money, so I compliment your expertise. Thank you very much.
That I want to tell you something.
You got one right.
Yeah.
Let me say
in my defense, I don't get these calls very often, so I'm going to milk this out as long as I can. I don't get those calls very often, but this is what I do say to people. I'm as good as the information you give me. So you bear some responsibility, and certainly much of the success rate goes on your shoulders, because consider this. I'm looking at this problem through your eyes. And most of the time with ladies, I'll expect a yes, and I'll say to people, the answer is yes, or the answer is no, or I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Guys don't know that three-word answer, I don't know, so they'll guess. So I remember a guy saying to me something about a headlights. I said, well, does this happen? And he said, no. Well, then he brings the car in, and And when
of course, it was happening.
It was happening.
Yeah.
So anyway, but anyway, thank you for that, Lou. Thank you for the
compliment. Well, of course, you deserve it. Now, at this time, I have another issue for the same car, 1996 Plymouth Voyager. The front dial on the driver's seat, which shows the temperature gauge, the fuel gauge, speedometer, odometer. These all just, when I turn the engine on and driving it, it's totally down. But within 98 degree temperature, 95 up, ambient temperature, boop, it comes on. And then it works and functional as, you know, like a new car.
Okay.
And when I turn it off, and again the following day, again it's dead. So I need to know, is there something that I could do with that too?
Yeah, there is. I like how you've determined that the temperature has something to do with it. But what I want to do is both when it's working and when it's not, I want you to pound on the dashboard. I don't want you to break the plastic. I don't want you to make any damage. But I want you to take your fist as if it was a hammer, and I want you to hit the right side, top of the dash. I want you to jar the dash, right side, center, left side. I want to know if you can make it either come or go by beating on the dashboard, which indicates a bad connection. And then it becomes easy. And the temperature, I don't want to chase it based on temperature. I would really like Lou to say, hey, I can make it go away or I can make it come back. And it's really not related to temperature. It seemed to me it was. Or you can say, no, it is related to temperature, but I can still make it come and go. At this point, if you can make it come and go, and if you've taken one of these dashboards apart before, because on a 1 to 10 scale, this baby's an 8 to a 9.5. So you take the dash panel out, and then you're going to disconnect this big plug at the back that goes to a printed circuit. And then you're going to check everything out, and you're going to clean connections. You're going to use some dielectric grease. You're going to use a lot of air, compressed air, blow everything out. We're going to find all kinds of French fries and hamburgers in that cavity as well from everything that fell through the dash and stuff. And then we'll put it all back together. And then actually when we take it apart, we're going to kind of pull the dash out, and we're going to grab a hold of that plug, and we're going to kind of wiggle it. And if it goes, and then we wiggle it, and it comes back, boom, we know that connection, we're going to clean that up, use a little dielectric, put it back together, and it should be fine. That's what you do. That's the starting process of the diagnosis, okay?
FYI, I brought the temperature issue because I've been experimenting this for 1 year.
Okay.
And in winter, it was totally down. In summer, when the temperature goes high, it comes back. This is why I brought up the temperature.
Now, and you're right. But what I don't want you to do is I don't want you to use that as the chase. And here's something else. There may be a voltage regulator on the dash, and the voltage regulator can be affected by temperature. And usually this snap-on device is $20 or less, if it's even got one, and I don't know that it does. But you can get an exploded drawing of your dashboard and figure that out yourself. But anyway, thank you very much, Lou. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. Gil answers the phone. Mark and Renee will answer the questions. As soon as Renee stops snoring, we'll be back after this. It's 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is my wife, Renee, and both of us have been in the auto repair business for 39 years. And I'm an ASE master technician, and she's even more sophisticated and more educated than I am because she corrects me on a regular basis.
Right.
Anyway, real quick, let me tell you about Kurtz Auto Repair. Kurtz is probably one of the best shops in town, if not. He's in certainly the top 20. And when it comes to him, and the reason I like Kurtz is because there are times that I send people to Kurtz, as I do all my shops, and that guy pulls a rabbit out of his hat every single time. So if you're anywhere near I-17 and Bell, they've been around since 1987. There's Kurt, there's Jeff, and there's Eric. They're all master technicians, and they run a really responsible shop, and they're really capable of diagnosing the car properly, bidding it properly, fixing it properly, verifying the repair, and then making sure they come in under their estimate. That's what good repair is all about. So I-17 and Bell, northeast corner, gas, diesel, and they hate it when I say this, but they do yard equipment. So if you have a blower that doesn't start or a lawnmower that doesn't start, Eric just loves those.
Oh, I bet he
so
does.
So just take it over to Eric at Kurtz and or call him and just say, I'd like to make an appointment for my lawnmower. He'll be happy to help you out. Let's go to the phone. Oh, by the way, the phone lines are 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. John, you're up first. What can I do for you?
Well, thank you for taking my call. My son has a 2000 Honda Pilot, and the air conditioning blows nice and cold when you're driving down the road. But the minute you stop at a traffic light or a drive-through, it starts blowing hot air. You get back on the road, and it gets cold again.
Okay.
Any idea?
Oh, sure I do. Sure I do. How much is it worth to you, buddy? I'm just teasing you. I'm just teasing you. Now, let's talk about this together. What's different in the environment when the car's moving down the road at 45 miles an hour and when you're stopped at the liquor store in a drive-thru?
The amount of air going through the air conditioning condenser, I guess.
You're exactly right. You're exactly right. So... And you've done a great job in identifying that and describing it, because I don't get that very often. But more than likely, there's going to be an auxiliary fan underneath the hood of that Pilot that's going to is supposed to be on. And so when you're, it's kind of like you're driving down to Tucson, and Mark, my car doesn't overheat; it runs really fine. And that the minute I stop, then you know it starts to get real hot. Airflow across the radiator. So you've got a condenser fan. That is either bad, the fan is bad, or the switch to turn on the fan is bad. Now, the fan can be turned on electronically by a sensor. So when we see high side pressure, we're supposed to turn the fan on. But if the switch is bad, then the fan won't come on. But if the switch is good and it's telling the fan to come on and it doesn't, then that the fan's a problem. There's a diagnostic procedure that needs to go on. But let me offer you this. Get a hammer. And bring it home and park it, uh-huh. Leave it running, and open up the hood. And if you find the electric fan motor, either on the front of the condenser or on the back side of the radiator, then I want you to gently tap it with a, if the fan's not running, gently tap it with a hammer. Not enough to dent or break the case, just tap it. If all of a sudden the fan goes woo, then I've just diagnosed it correctly. You need a fan motor.
Oh, okay.
So sometimes we just hit it and jar the brushes inside the motor or jar a bad connection that's worn. How many miles has this Pilot got on it, you think?
Just over 100.
Okay. So that's what I would be looking at. I would be, and then here's another verification. It's you bring it home, you park it, you leave the air on, and you just feel it warm up. Grab your garden hose and spray through the grill onto the condenser. Boom, the temperature will drop immediately. So now we know it's airflow issue. We still have to determine if it's the switch or the fan motor. Okay?
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Don, you're up next. How can I help you?
I was trying to figure out who was waking up who. You said you were waking up Renee, but maybe she was waking up you.
That's
no,
right.
No, that's really not
they
true.
They know you.
No, that's really not true. I was up at 5, and you weren't.
Okay.
Okay. Is this Don, the tow truck driver that wants to start trouble? Because I got your cell phone number.
Okay. That's my nature.
Okay.
Hey, question is clock spring. How long does it take, and do you have to use both pullers on it?
You're going to have to pull the steering wheel. That's for sure.
Yeah.
There's going to be a specific, and I know guys don't like to do this, but there's going to be some directions in there that give you specific instructions on what to do. I would park it with the steering wheel straight ahead and the front tire straight ahead. Disconnect the battery. The negative side is all you need. And pull the horn pad, pull the steering. And I'm not familiar with anything that you don't have to pull the steering wheel. I don't know. I've never seen a clock spring sit on top of the steering wheel and underneath the horn pad. I've never seen one, but I've been wrong before.
Okay, what about the turn signal switch?
I think it's going to be on top of the turn signal switch. I don't think it's going to be below the turn signal switch. But if it is underneath the turn signal switch, then just wiggle that harness up and down.
Yeah.
And while you look at the bottom, find the plug. You'll pull the plug apart because it'll usually give you 3 or 4 inches of slop before that plug hits the tunnel that runs that wire harness up. So you'll have a little bit of room to do that. You know, Don, if you have any problems, just call Renee, and she'll come over and help you. Or you, just get your wife to help you, Don.
Oh, I can't get my wife. We put my stepson through the GM classes when Mesa Votek was how long ago it was. And I asked him, and he says, man, I haven't done one of them in so long that I may have forgotten, because he's got some issues like that. So I says, okay, well, I will call the master.
Yeah,
on a 1 to 10 scale. Don't call him the master, please.
No, but he calls me master, but there's other words behind it that's nasty, okay?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, okay. Not too long ago, we had a clock spring issue, and I was trying to help and stuff, and it turned out that they didn't follow the directions. There's some specific kind of, now I'm making fun of the process, but it's kind of like, turn the steering wheel all the way to the right, honk the horn twice, wave a dead chicken around your head, turn the steering wheel back to the middle.
2 minutes.
There's craziness involved in that. So sometimes just make sure
you're
directions.
I knew you had your S truck, and you were saying you had to change it like every 100,000 or so. Yeah. I know you bought it new.
Yeah,
I've got almost 112 on mine, and I don't think it's ever been changed. So
okay, and really and truly, there's no harm, no foul here. When the clock spring goes down, then that airbag is disabled. So
right.
There's no.
The light flashes, it comes on and it goes off.
Then that's almost always the clock spring. Now you can turn it on, turn the steering wheel left, and then kind of hit the steering wheel. And if hitting the steering wheel makes the light go on and off, then it's definitely the clock spring.
Yeah, that's what's happened.
All right, good luck to you. Thank you very much. All righty, and I'm going to write down clock spring, and I'm also going to write down Don, tow truck driver, and get his cell phone on my pad. All right. Anyway, if you'd like to call, we're up against a break, but you can call now, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and we're more than happy to take your call and help you with your car questions. I'm really good at... My husband says this, and I think this. I'm really good at those kinds of things.
Yeah. No, you're not.
I am really good at that. I'm good at stirring the pot.
That's exactly right.
What was that Henri thing that we saw the other day? That there was something that sent me somebody. He said, I don't know if I can live the good life because honoriness is not a part of it or something like that. It was something that somebody sent me.
Okay.
Nevertheless, yep, I'm a little ornery today. It's just, I was sweating
today,
bullets.
Most days.
I was sweating bullets this morning because we couldn't connect our equipment and I was going to have to do this radio show on the cell phone and my battery wasn't charged and so I was going to have to go get an extension cord and wah, 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 but we're working. 602-508-0960. Well, welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Saturdays from 10 to 12, we're here talking about cars and car repair problems. And I can do some estimates, but don't tell me the numbers you've got, and I'll guess first. So sometimes I'm good at that. Sometimes I'm really terrible, but if you have an estimate. But more important on the estimate side, what's important is symptoms. It's really important. The self-defense for car expense is really just one question. You said I need motor mounts. What symptoms do I have today that you're going to fix? And folks, I want to tell you, that is a really tough question to answer when you're lying about the repair.
When there is no symptoms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because almost every single part of your car, almost every single part of your car has a symptom associated with it being bad. So motor mounts are typically vibrations. And so if he said, well, I'm going to fix a vibration. Well, I don't have one. Show me the vibration.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me how to do the vibration. Now, if he says you need a motor mount or all your motor mounts, and he takes you out and he puts you in your car and he says, okay, it's in park. Feel anything? No. Close your eyes. Feel anything? No. Well, I'm going to put it in reverse. Do you feel anything? No. I'm going to put it in drive. Do you feel different? Yes. Okay, now I'm not going to tell you where I'm putting it. So as I move it around, I'm going to ask you, vibration, yes, vibration, no. Every time I put it in drive, you said I had a vibration. That's called the load mount. Yes, it's bad. I'm going to fix that vibration.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I didn't even notice it. But you noticed it between park, reverse, and drive. You noticed the difference. Yes, I did. Okay, I'm going to fix that. And I'm going to give you your old mount. Now, with technology we have today, we can take a picture. if we take the mount off, it's obviously going to be bad. We set the mount, and then we already have a new one. We set it side by side, and we just take a picture and send it to you. Mm-hmm. And you have a picture of your old mount, and you have a picture of the new mount. So you have a picture of what that's like. A lady brought in a Jeep Cherokee not too long ago, and she was having a tough time with airflow. She'd turn it on high speed, and it would just whisper out of the vents. So we took it apart. At some time or another, somebody that owned this Jeep had an animal. This animal shed like a big dog. I mean, this animal was a... We found a mat of hair that was a half an inch thick that completely covered the evaporator underneath the dash on the passenger side of this Jeep.
Yeah. We not only... The cabin air filters get filthy, too.
Oh, the hair. Whole inside. We actually took the dashboard apart to get the heater core and the evaporator out. And we took a gasoline-powered yard leaf blower and opened up all the doors and blew it all outside. And then we didn't realize when we were blowing it out that the wind was carrying it into the shop. So we quickly realized that. We moved the car around to the end of the shop, and then the wind would blow it, you know, somewhere
far
else.
Far away, yeah.
Far away. So nevertheless, that's kind of an important... What symptoms are you going to fix? You need an alignment. What symptoms are you going to do? Well, let me show you your tire wear. But if they hear, they're lying. So that's what's important. Show me. Show me the symptoms. All right, let's go to Dennis. Dennis, good morning. You waited a long time. Hey. Thank you.
Yeah, good morning, guys. How are you?
Good.
Good.
Very much. Thank you.
Good. Hey, I've got an 05 Silverado half-ton, about 116,000 miles with a 5.3 liter. And lately I've been experiencing, I get a loud knock, not every day, but occasionally, in the engine. And then it would just go away.
Okay.
And then the last couple of days, not every single day, I've had that knock that would go away. And then my engine, the performance would just degrade.
Okay.
2 minutes.
It didn't feel right. But if I stop, wait a little while, start the engine, it's fine.
Okay. Well, that's called a reset. Is there any check engine light on?
No.
Okay.
In fact, I'm driving right now, and it's driving perfectly fine.
Okay. When this knock starts, is the engine still idling smoothly when you pull off to the side of the road and stop? Is you still got a smooth idle?
Yeah, I do. Yep.
Okay. So there's no outward symptom except this noise.
Right. It's a knocking noise, and I've opened the hood, and it sounds like it's coming from the driver's side toward the front of the engine.
Well, you could,
but it doesn't. Pardon me?
Go ahead.
No, I'm saying it doesn't do it every single day. It just does it occasionally, but just the performance degrading is recent.
Well,
and it's not all the time. It's random.
Well, there's a lot that can be going on here. You can have a broken power steering bracket, and it's causing a knock. The computer interprets that as it's the timing's too far in advance, so the computer starts retarding the timing. Well, when it starts retarding the timing, he's going to retard your ability to drive that motor good. So it's going to take power away from you. So the question is where's the knock coming from? And most of us are pretty adept at finding the knock. And most of us know how to do that. Most of us have the stethoscopes. Now, it could be a broken flywheel. It could be that. It could be a broken bracket. It can be an exhaust noise that sounds like a knock that's fooling everything. So you got to find the knock. Now, if you want, and if you think it's bad, and I don't think it's bad, because if you had a knock inside the motor, there's a good chance you'd have the knock all the time. It wouldn't come and go.
Right.
So if you had a rod bearing...
I'm sorry. A lifter being intermittent, working or not working, or collapsing, or anything like that?
Well, the bracket would definitely be there under load. So if you put it in neutral... That if you get the knocking noise, then I'd pull off the side of the road, throw it in neutral. I would take it and put it the transmission in neutral. I'd turn the steering wheel left and right. I would do things to see if I can change the knock. Me either make it happen or make it go away. But
okay.
If it's a flex plate, I can't tell you how many times we've been fooled by a flex plate. And
oh,
I
wow.
can tell
okay.
you an embarrassing situation where we diagnosed this Cadillac as needing an engine because of this knock, and it was a knock on a regular basis. And some old guy named Al Kitts, through the grace of God, they took it to another shop for another opinion. He called me up, and he says, I fixed your knock for $200. And I was embarrassed, and I said, well, I need to learn. and he's still alive. He's one of the best techs I've ever met. And this was back in the 70s. So I went over there, and he showed me what the mistake I made, and he showed me the broken flex plate, and he showed me how to diagnose it. So that was an embarrassing time for us. And obviously we lost the customer's faith because we're bidding a $3,000 motor, and he fixes it for $200. And then to make matters worse, it was a $300 repair, so he did it for $200 just to make matters worse. So anyway, if you have the knock, you can stop by either a transmission shop or a mechanical shop that you've done business with before, and not on Monday morning or Friday afternoons for obvious reasons, and have them look at it. So there's nothing wrong with that. All righty?
Hey, do you recommend a shop here in North Phoenix?
Give me better coordinates than that. North at west, northeast, north central?
North central.
Bell and I-17 or Deer Valley and I-17?
Yeah.
Okay.
Bell and 17 is good. Yeah.
Okay. Deer Valley is Action Auto, northwest corner of Deer Valley and I-17, northwest corner. Tom is a great guy. And then Kurtz is at I-17 and Bell, northeast corner. And either one of those guys, there's a really good chance, based on their experience, that those guys are going to be able to identify your knock if it's happening right then.
Okay, awesome. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And when we come back, we're going to talk about a transmission shop that's a pretty good guy, but we can talk to you as well, 602-508-0960. So I really like those ads from the Health Council when they talk about, you know, your kids and teaching them how to do a wax ring, you know, all that kind of stuff, and talk to your kids. And then that lady just said, you know, why do you have your pants on your head? That's something people have asked me before.
Yeah, we don't want to get into that. You need to talk about your transmission shop.
Oh, you take all the fun out. You're like my mother. You know what I mean? You're like my mother.
Somebody needs to keep you.
All righty. Fine and dandy. Well, speaking of fine and dandy, Automatic Transmission Exchange, Phil, has been around since 1968 in the same building at 40th Street and Washington. Phil knows transmissions, and he has walked the walk from the two-speed power glides to the very first transmissions we put in, all the way to the electronic son of a guns with, you know, solenoids that shift it, and the computer closes this solenoid and opens this one to give you third gear and all that fancy stuff. But the fundamentals of automatic transmissions hasn't changed. The difference is what we used to use before, vacuum and fluid pressure to make things happen. Now we use electronics to open and close circuits to make it happen. But Phil already knows that. So if you're in Phoenix and you need somebody to look at your transmission, it's a good guy to go to. Automatic Transmission Exchange. We call it ATE, Automatic Transmission Exchange. Been around a long time. 40th Street in Washington, north side of the road. Okay. And 602-508. Hang on just a minute. I'll find it. 602-508-0960. I've only said it for like
years? Brain fade there.
Brain fade is a nice word.
I know.
602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. So if you call in, then Gil's going to give me the air gun noise, and I'll know you're there, and we'll just get right to it. But I want to tell you something else, and I've been talking about this, and there's no real rhyme or reason, but I think I'm a consumer advocate, and I just want to tell you that if the same person owned every single Jeep store in town, chances of you going from one store to the other and getting a different deal is slim and none. Because if they got a monopoly on it, it's a monopoly.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with that. I have a monopoly probably in my zip code with respect to car repair. I'm certainly one of the two or three guys there that probably has the majority of the business. Monopolies aren't bad, but here's the deal. In Phoenix, you're not going to get a whole lot of variation if you're looking for a Polaris, a Can-Am, a Yamaha, a Honda, a Kawasaki, any of the motorsports kind of things. You're going to have to go outside the city. Now, to the north is Rye, which is Four Seasons Motorsports. You're going to talk to Bob there. He has Polaris, Can-Am, and Yamaha. Two-wheelers, four-wheelers, everything you want. That Can-Am comes with and without a turbo. The turbo one is like rocket ship fast. That's the one at the sand dunes everybody wants to have. Now, you can go to Sierra Vista or call Cliff at Cochise Motorsports. And then you can go to Casa Grande or call John at Adrenaline Motorsports. Here's why. It's important to just say, how much do I write my check for before I leave home? And you make everybody follow that. And then you ask them to be specific what the line items are. Here's why. I've bought motorcycles. How many motorcycles have I bought?
I don't know. You've had one ever since I've known you.
Yeah. Well, you're right. As a matter of fact, our first date was on a motorcycle.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you didn't tell your dad, never told your dad that we went on a motorcycle, did you?
Mm-mm.
Okay. So I've bought a lot of motorcycles, and you know that I sometimes compare the build sheet or the receipt.
Right.
Now, not too long ago, I bought one, and I was kind of just mad at myself because they had shipping, they had freight, they had dock fees, they had setup, they had get ready, they had all these funny numbers in there. So the first number they quoted me was quite different than the last number I ended up writing my check for. But I learned, just like everybody else. That's the reason I'm offering you this, is because everybody gets treated the same by the customer if they're smart. So you can call all the shops in town. But the bottom line is this is what I want. Is it a 17 or an 18? And tell me what the invoice looks like. Now, the guys that won't give you that information are the guys you need to be afraid of. The other guys will. Now, to give you an idea of that, I'm practice what I preached. I couldn't get a deal on a 170 Polaris and the other one's a little 90 Polaris, is it? Or is it a Suzuki?
No, they're both Polaris.
Okay, so I wanted a 90 four-wheeler, and then I wanted a 170 side-by-side for my grandkids.
Right.
So I called around, and most people wouldn't give me a number. So I called Cochise Motorsports down in Sierra Vista, and I talked to Cliff, and he says, this is how much, this is how much. And I was floored by the price. Now, I figured out that by the time I drove down to Sierra Vista and picked them up and came back, I had paid myself more than $150 an hour to pull that off.
Right.
So I made money by driving down there, and I bought them for a lot less. Now, I haven't had any issues with them, but I did have one of them that had a cold start problem, so I took it over to Rye, and that's called Four Season Motorsports, and they fixed it. As a matter of fact, he did something that was really special. His name was Noah, and he was a service manager there at Rye. I called him up, and I said, this is what I got. I got an extended cold start. So it takes forever to crank it and get it running. And I've got spark and fuel, so I'm real concerned about what it might be. Could it be electronics? Could it be the module, something? And he goes, Mr. Salem, it needs a valve adjustment. And I said, Noah. How is that? And he goes, that's just the way it is. The valves are too tight, and I bet it run. When you finally get it running, it runs poorly, and then after a while, it runs better. I said, that's exactly what it does. I said, how much is a valve adjustment? And he says, that, along with rejetting your carburetor, is going to be like $126. I said, fine, I'll bring it down. When can you get to it? And he says, well, get it down here. It'll take me 3 or 4 days to get you in queue. I said, fine. That son of a gun starts like a brand-new car.
Well, that's good.
And he diagnosed it over the phone, but it had a lot to do with my description. It was pretty, you know, I was able to give him the symptoms that I knew that I had. But it was just amazing to me that he did that. And I complimented him when I picked it up. I said to him, the fact that you diagnosed that over the phone is pretty amazing to me. Right. So I appreciate that. I know what that takes. And he just kind of smiled. And so I bought him lunch, too.
Okay.
And there's a caller, and I hope it's not Noah, because he says maybe it was 156. I don't remember.
Yeah, it probably was more, but
anyway,
still, it was worth it because it was
Gil,
fixed.
Who we got?
Well, you're in luck. It's not Noah. It's John.
Hi, John. Good morning to you. How can I help you, buddy?
I want to say two things. Something about the transmission exchange place on Washington, and I have an airbag light on my old Ford Chevy, and I can't get it to go out. What do I got to do to get that to go out?
You got to figure out where the problem is. The airbag light is the airbag module saying, I'm raising my hand because I've lost connection to something. I've lost connection to the side airbags, to the overhead airbags, the front airbag, the passenger side airbag. So it's really easy because you plug in a scanner and not a code reader. There's a big difference. There's thousands of dollars worth of difference because the three-whiskered kid can pull it in and he goes, oh, yeah, you have a code here. Yeah, you have an airbag fault. Okay, what are you going to do? Sell me 5 airbags, young man? Of course, he's hoping you'll buy 5 airbags, but there's all kinds of issues. The clock spring is the most common issue because that's the one component that's constantly moving with your steering wheel. So the clock spring is the most likely thing that it is. I strongly suggest you have it diagnosed because it could be. Not too long ago, we had an airbag, side airbag, that had come loose because somebody in the back seat had kicked a harness out from underneath the front passenger seat. So the harness had come disconnected. So that's one of those that cost $65 to find it and 50 cents to fix it. and that's how it works. But I wouldn't go to a transmission shop.
I want to say something about automatic transmission. Last 4th of July, we have an 04 Sequoia, and I came home from the gas station. And this thing was pouring fluid out of it. I mean, pouring fluid. So I went to the regular transmission place, and they said $3,500. And I go, you haven't even looked at it. He goes, it's $3,500. We'll just throw another rebuilt in there. I said, but I don't want a rebuilt. I want mine rebuilt. So I said, screw it. I went to automatic transmission exchange and talked to the guy down there, and he says, yeah, I can rebuild yours for $3,500, but you might have a bushing or something that went out, and that, you know, could be a hell of a lot cheaper. And he said about $1,800. And I said, okay, what happens if I take the transmission out and bring it to you? He goes, it's a lot cheaper. So I brought the transmission down to him. He put a new bushing, a new seal, everything in that transmission, had it done in one day for $800. Man, you talk about somebody that was happy as hell from $800 to $3,500 and did it the same day and answered every stupid question I asked him to the point of showing me how to put fluid in it and everything else because it's a sealed system. They were fantastic. I could not say enough.
Well, that's a wonderful thing. I want you to know that happens in our industry a lot, and it's the shotgun repair. It's you got a leak, and then the next question is how many miles has your car got on it, John? And they put the miles, and that's called odometer surfing, by the way. We're surfing your odometer. So we're telling you what you need based on the miles on your car. We don't even know that you had a transmission put in at 85, and now you're at 145. We don't know that. So, and what you're talking about is guys that are old and gray, and the guys are not, they probably own their property.
Right.
They don't have a rent payment anymore of $15,000 a month.
Well, you're talking between the good and the bad. The first one he got was the just
mild $3,500.
Yeah.
And I'm saying that the difference, the older guys have already paid off their building. They don't have huge debt services, and these guys are going to sell $3,500 transmissions because they need the business.
Right.
So
yeah, but this guy at Automatic Transmission Exchange, when you say you're leaking fluid, like he could have quoted me anything, and I would have said, you know, you're right. But $800, man, I was from 800 to 35. You're talking a happy camper, buddy.
Well, and you're exactly right. The difference, I think, is I can be rich or I can be your hero. And there's a lot of us that don't have any problem with that distinction. We'd rather be your hero. We'd rather say to you, look, it could be an $800 deal, but you need it. The $3,500 is a little high. I'm just making up numbers here. $35 is a little high. I'm probably going to be in the $3,000, $3,200 range tax out the door. But let me just go in. And then he comes back, and you already laid $3,200 on the table, and he comes back and goes, it's $800. So that's he's your hero, and then he ends up with what you're talking about. And I wrote that down at what time you started, because I'm going to cut it out at 39:26, cut it out and send it over to Phil.
Yeah.
If he has the technology to just listen to it.
He will.
Phil knows, I think he knew Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
I think he did.
Well, I appreciate you mentioning them because it's just the last minute. I remember you saying it on the show that they were a good shop. So, you know, it worked out fantastic, and I appreciate it.
All righty. Thank you, John. Thank you very much for that. We get that a lot, though.
Yeah.
We do get – we don't necessarily on the radio, but we get the call that says somebody else said this, and I took it to this and stuff like that. Now, every once in a while, we get a complaint. Mm-hmm. We had a complaint not too long ago, and on our website, it specifically says that if the shop gets a complaint
– 1 minute.
And it's then the customer has to file a nice complaint with the Better Business Bureau. The Better Business Bureau will come to the determination. And in this case, the Better Business Bureau told the shop to pay the customer $2,000. If the shop said no, Mark would have. I would have paid the customer, but the shop paid the customer.
Yeah.
And so the customer was happy, really happy, mm-hmm. and the shop is still on the list. I'm not going to name the shop, but he's still on the list.
Right.
He's a good guy.
Right.
He fixed it. He made it right. I wish he wouldn't have taken as long as he did, but that's okay. That's not the promise I made. My promise is if he doesn't pay, I will.
Yeah.
602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. And if nobody calls, then it's going to be you and me for the next hour. And that's going to be boring.
It is.
602-508-0960. Call in. Make up a question. Get something. Help me out. Talking to my wife for the next hour? Welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. And during the break, sometimes I think of stuff. And we were talking just a little earlier when we were talking to John. And John had taken his car that had a transmission leak to a shop. And they quoted him $3,500 without opening up the hood, blah, blah, blah. And then he took it over to Automatic Transmission Exchange, a shop that's on my list. And they fixed it for $800. But in fairness, John took the transmission out, which would have saved him on that $3,500 estimate as well. We talked about different shops and how they say, what they say, and how they think. And I said something about being your hero or having your money.
Right.
I think the difference there is the hero feeling's a good feeling, but when you take advantage of them, you're always wondering if that was a scam from the AG's office or somebody else or some television station that brought something in. So when you do that kind of stuff, there's a long-term effect that probably wears off after some period of time, but there is a long-term effect, and it's a negative effect. You're just looking over your shoulder all the time. So it's easy for many of us to decide to be heroes and just play the game like it ought to be played.
Right.
All righty. And then another shop that's on my list, that's an important shop that's on my list, is Larry Harker's Auto Repair. They've been in business in Phoenix since 1967. Bob and Ellen run Larry Harker's Auto. Bob is a wizard when it comes to electrical work, brake service, auto emissions, vehicle magnets. But if you start your story off with this, I've had my car to a lot of shops and nobody can fix this, that's what Bob's good for. That's like waving the red flag in front of the bull. He'll get his back up and he'll say, I can fix this. And he does. I've sent him difficult cars. I remember a Dodge truck, and he fixed it, and nobody else could fix it. So if you're in the 38th Avenue and Indian School Road and you're looking for a good, honest shop, may I suggest Larry Harker's Auto. But if you've got a car nobody else can fix and you live near 38th Avenue and Indian School or a 10-mile radius for
or
that
anywhere,
matter,
yeah,
you can go see Bob at Larry Harker's Auto. Okay, Greg, you're up. How can I help you this morning, Greg?
Hey, Mark. I'll take you way back. I have a 79 Magnum, speaking of transmissions. It takes a while for it to go into gear on a Colt when you first start it up. Once it goes into gear, it's fine pretty much the rest of the day.
Okay. Okay.
What am I looking at?
Well, it's got hard internal seals, and that's why it's taken a while to go into gear. I want you to try something. This year worked. This has worked a lot more than it's not worked. I want you to buy a pint of .3 or .4 brake fluid, and it's a hydraulic fluid, and I want you to put half the bottle in the transmission. Now, brake fluid helps hard rubber seals. It returns some semblance of pliability to them. So, more times than not, this will make a difference, because it's going to soften and return some pliability to the hard internal seals that are not capturing the pressure, and that's why you have a delayed engagement. Those are the two fancy words for what you have. Now,
right,
to go in and pull that transmission out and put new seals in it, you know, is a bad idea. So you either live with it or you go in and say, look, let's do the clutches, let's do the sprags, let's do the external seals, internal seals, let's do the whole thing. Let's bring it back out of the ground and make it a new transmission. So I want you to try that first. I think I have a 75% chance of sending you in the right direction. It's not anything that's going to happen immediately, but it'll be noticeably better, if not perfect. So try that. What part of town do you live in?
Glendale.
Okay. I don't really have a transmission shop up in that area anymore. But what I would do in Glendale is I'd probably get a hold of one of the shops in Glendale and say to them, who do you send your transmission work to? But I do have something to offer you. In the event that you decide you want to do that, I do this for everybody. There is a couple of wholesale shops in town that will not deal with customers, but they will. I'm allowed to send cars to them. So what I do is you bring your car to me, I deliver it to him, and I'm the middle guy. I don't make any money on the turnaround. My point is just to get you in. That's what's the important part. So, but automatic transmission exchange down on Washington and 40th Street's a great shop. Mm-hmm. So certainly you could go to him as well. He's certainly capable. He was born and raised on transmissions older than your 79 Magnum. All righty?
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much, man.
You betcha. Jerry, you're up next. Jerry, how are you today?
I'm doing good. How about you, Mark?
I'm good. I'm out of jail, and I'm not in trouble, and my wife's not mad at me. That's a pretty good day for me.
Life is good, then.
Yeah.
I've got an 09 Durango with a 4.7 motor that I called you on before. It's kind of the end of the life on it. We're using about 400 miles. I'm adding a quart of oil, 400 to 500. And I have no leaks. I'm wondering if I can change the oil from a 520 to something else that will help thicken it up so that I'm not using as much.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, okay. You're not leaking the oil, so you must be sending it out the tailpipe.
Yeah,
okay.
That's what it's looking like.
All right. So I think I just jump. Let's just jump in right now. Let's go to a 30 weight or a 40 weight right now. See what happens.
Straight 30 or straight 40?
Yep. How many miles are on this thing?
150.
Okay, so it's been around the world 6 times. We got nothing to lose. I mean, it's not as if this motor is so tight that by putting peanut butter in it, it's going to object. and what's going to happen, if it hasn't happened already, you're going to foul a spark plug somewhere down the line, because in order for the oil to go out the tailpipe and not leak on the ground, it has to go out the tailpipe. So sooner or later, you're going to find that cylinder. And so then you take that plug out and you go buy a couple of them and you replace them when the engine miss reappears. But I want to tell you, I've been married 44 years, and Renee and I have driven in cars like that for a lot.
Yep.
So, you know, just put some peanut butter in it and see if you can change it to a quart every 1,000 miles by going to a 40 weight, then what the heck? That's exactly what I'd do.
Okay, well, that sounds like a good plan then.
All right, good luck to you. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you much.
You bet. S&S Tire Service is on the west side. He's got 3 locations: Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. I know Dan and Rob. They're second generations. They took over the business from their father, who I respected beyond belief. Just like our kids are in the process of taking over our business, Rob and Dan are smart cookies, and they know the difference between BS from their employees and the truth. These young men have been raised in an environment that's second to none, second to few. So if you're in the west side, they've been open there in the west side since 1976. And what I like about them is they have a full selection of tires. So you can stop by and say, take a look at my tires and give me a good, better, best price for 4. Now, they can do something many other tire shops can't do, and that's they can read the front wear on the tires and suggest what you might need so that wear doesn't duplicate on your new tires. So see, if you buy your tires from a tire wholesaler and then you bring it to my shop and you want me to fix something, I don't have the evidence to know what it is. I would have loved to have seen those tires before you had them changed, because I can read the tires. I can look at the wear patterns. I can see what's going on. And there's at least 5 to 10 different wear patterns. So you can't describe them. So you have to look at it. So S&S is a really good guy. They do alignment, suspension work. They do tire and all related kind of stuff. So if you're looking for new tires for anything you own, from a wheelbarrow to a tractor, then S&S Tires in the West, S&S Tires, the 3 locations in the West Valley, is who I would suggest you go to. And we got another caller. Good deal for us. Who is it, Gil?
It's Bruce.
Bruce, good morning. How can we help you?
Good morning, Mark. Love your show. I've got a 2000 Dodge pickup, Ram 1500, and when I go down the road, when I accelerate, my air conditioning stops blowing. When I let up off the gas, the air conditioning starts blowing again. So I'm sure there's a vacuum leak, but I have no idea where to look.
Yeah, we need to make sure the vacuum supply is correct. How many miles are on that truck?
99,927.
Oh, stop bragging. My God, stop bragging. All right, let me explain. I want you to pretend like that the port on the intake manifold of this thing is like a straw. I'm just using visual stuff, okay? Now the straw is virtually completely restricted with carbon, so there is a small hole that an eighth-inch drill bit might fit into, but really that port, for all intents and purposes, is plugged up. And the insufficient supply of vacuum is exactly what we're talking about with yours. So the very first thing I would do is I'd find the vacuum leak that leaves the top of that motor and goes to the firewall and goes through the firewall. That's the vacuum line you want. And then I would disconnect it from the port at the engine. And then I would look to see if I could see, look inside there. Now, here's the bad news. The bad news is it's not like you can stick a drill bit in there, because we don't want to aspirate that stuff inside that hole.
2 minutes.
So a lot of us will just pressurize the engine with air. and as we dig that carbon out of there, it blows it out at us. So there's a lot of things that you can do. But you ought to be careful. Some of us will soften it up with some transmission fluid first, and then we'll scrape it out of there. And we knowing full well that we softened it up, so if it goes out the tailpipe, it'll be okay. Now, there's going to be a very small plastic line. If you find this plastic line is broken or burnt, you can go get some windshield wiper hose. You get some windshield wiper hose. You can cut the bad piece of small plastic line out and slide the windshield wiper hose off one side and on the other. Not too long ago, I don't know who was it, a window washer guy or something that came over? Oh, it was the microwave guy. The guy came over to fix the microwave, and he was telling me about his Dodge truck. So I says, I can fix it. And he looked at me like I was an idiot. Yeah. I said, I can fix it. So we went out, we opened it up, I looked at the line, it's broken.
Yeah.
I go back into the barn, I get a small piece of windshield wiper, I plug it in, he goes, forgive me if I don't believe you. And I said, forgive me if I don't believe you that you fixed my microwave.
Yeah.
So he started it up, and he went and drove, and he comes back, and he goes, it's fixed.
Okay.
He says, what do I owe you? And I said, nothing. What? What do you want?
Oh,
what do you
nothing.
Want me to do?
Nothing. Brute. Okay. So he just needs to look for
that's the issue. He needs to find the line. Now, it could be that this little plastic thing's broken because his truck's kind of old. He said it was a 2000, so it's 18 years old. And so I think that's an easy one. I don't think it's a dashboard problem. I think it's a supply problem or that line's broken or cracked. And if you want to find a vacuum leak, you take a piece of half-inch heater hose that's about 4 feet long, stick one end in your ear, and start waving the other end around all the vacuum areas, and you'll be able to hear the noise from the vacuum leak. Okay?
Oh, okay. All right, I'll give that a try. It's not that I need air conditioning in Phoenix. It's just, you know,
I'd like
to have it work all the time.
Yeah, nobody does.
Okay, and speaking of that, and thank you, Bruce. Thank you very much. AC goes away. I got to write that down so I remember. I'm going to cover that right now. Gil says it's okay if I'm a minute out.
Yeah.
Gosh almighty. It's important to know that in the old days, we didn't have a dipstick on the Freon. And everybody just added or subtracted by the seat of their pants. That's the way it was. That's the best we had. Our industry was no better than that. Today, we have an electronic dipstick. So we have the ability to know that your car holds 30 ounces of refrigerant. We then suck out your old refrigerant, and you have 20. We're going to clean it up, take the water and the trash out of it. We're going to put it back in your car. We're going to add 10 more ounces. You're going to spend between $100 and $175, and we're going to send you out the door, and this is what we're going to tell you. Now, this is my shop. I can't speak for everybody. We had a guy come in with a Volvo, and he says, you know, I've had this done so many times, nobody's been able to fix it. And Alan, my son, said, let me tell you, you're a first-time customer. You're going to Tucson. Go on down to Tucson. If your Volvo isn't a whole bunch better, obviously better, then on your way back, just drive on by. Don't pay the bill. The guy was gone 30 minutes. He calls Alan and he goes, here's my credit card. And we're not the only guys in town that have that piece of equipment. But it's real, and 125 of it is the labor. And the equipment.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit more than that, folks, but whatever.
125 is the labor, doesn't include the Freon.
I know, but you said like 150. I think it's going to be more than that, but.
Okay, it depends on how much
Freon
they need.
There
Boy, you know,
go.
I don't know why I have
there
you here.
There you go.
But the idea is that we can really hit the nail on the head, and we never, ever realized, us gray-haired guys never realized how precise we must get it in order to make it blow as cold as it possibly can.
Yeah.
And so our success rate has been huge. I don't think we've offered that to new customers and existing customers. Nobody has not paid their bill. Yeah. Everybody's been happy with the results. So if you have a car at 120 degrees temperature, 110 degrees, and you're not real happy, find somebody with the, Mark calls it the electronic dipstick, and ask them, can you suck it out? Can you weigh it? Can you determine exactly how low I am? And then add that many ounces back to it, and let me leave with exactly what it came from the factory. Mm-hmm. And that's your best served with. Now, if it holds 30 ounces and you have 5, we need to fix the leak first.
Right.
But we're not going to put 25 back in it and send you out the door. That's a bad deal.
Yeah.
All righty, 602-508-0960. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. My wife has gone outside, which is a good thing because I don't have anybody telling me what to do, but right now I need to talk about Strictly Diesel. Folks, it's a pleasure of mine to talk about the shops that are on my best car repair shops list. That list has existed since 1988. We've had one time where I even came close to making the refund or the repair because the shop wouldn't. One time. And actually, it ended up in favor of the customer. So when I talk about these guys, it's with pride I talk about them because I know the owner. I could pick him out of a crowd in a heartbeat. I have his cell phone number, and they know where they can go, and we can bounce stuff off of one another. Strictly Diesel is one of those. Strictly Diesel handles Strictly Diesel. They do light, domestic, and foreign diesel trucks. They're located at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak, and they're open Monday through Friday, and they sell parts 24 hours a day online. So you can talk to the experts online. You can look at all the different options for cold air kits and programmers and chips. You can do all that kind of stuff. But Strictly Diesel is a Better Business Bureau A-plus rated shop. They're good at what they do. And Nate, when you meet Nate, there's two things you're going to say to yourself. Number one, doggone, he's tall. And number two, he can play tennis with his hands. That's how big his hands are. But he's one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet. So Strictly Diesel. Let's go to the phones. Who we got there, Gil?
We have Peter.
Peter, good morning to you. How can I help you today?
I have a 98 Mercury Sable, and the air conditioner is blowing cold air out of the front vents. And after I have stopped or I'm braking to make a corner and I give it gas, it stops blowing out of the front vent and goes to the defroster.
Okay.
And then it does that for about 5-10 seconds, or probably when I get up to speed and I kind of let off of the gas a little, then it blows back the other way.
Okay. Good for you that you picked up that it goes to defrost. Most people don't do that. And in your particular case, because it's a 98 Sable, it's just like, I think we had a Dodge Magnum here just a second ago. No, that wasn't. Hang on a minute, and I'll tell you, because that we had an air conditioning issue. But nevertheless, what you've got is you're losing vacuum that supplies. We need vacuum to keep it at the center vents, and you have three locations. You have defrost top, center vent is the middle, and then we have floor vent. So by you defaulting up there, we're running out of vacuum. I want to tell you that 75-80% of the time, some gray-haired guy is going to fix this for less than $80. We're not going to have to go into the dash. It's going to be something underneath the hood. We have a vacuum line that comes off the motor, and it's going to wind its way around a bunch of stuff, and it's going to go through the firewall, and it's going to go to the mode switch, which allows you to pick air and what position and stuff like that. Very rarely is it the mode switch, but it could be the mode switch. And if it's the mode switch, my $80 goes out the door. So okay. We're going to have to take the dash apart. We're going to have to get to the mode switch and replace it. That's going to be something that we're going to isolate. So we're going to apply vacuum to that hose. We're going to disconnect it from the motor. We're going to get our assistant next to us. And while we're driving down the road, I'm going to have him apply vacuum to the inlet, to the controls. And if he can apply vacuum and make things happen, then I have a supply problem. But if he applies vacuum and it still goes that way, then the mode switch or some portion of the infrastructure on your climate control panel is bad. So it's kind of an easy one, or it's going to be a little bit more expensive. When I say a little bit more expensive, we're talking a couple of $100 to dig the dash.
Okay. I have one other question, if you have time.
I do.
Okay. Looking at a car for my wife, and I'm coming across either a 2.4 liter or a 2.5, but the 2.4 liter has more horsepower than the 2.5. What am I looking at here? She kind of went to Your wife's not there, right? She went to the driving school, your wife's thing?
Yeah. Does she drive by
braille? So she likes to just bomb, you know, she wants, you know. Well, looking for a Mustang 302, for, you know.
Yeah, that's the only way to drive.
Yeah.
Yes, of course.
Well, does your wife drive by braille?
No.
Okay. Well, her tires and wheels on the driver, on the passenger side clearly shows she does.
Yeah.
And she says to me, the only reason why no one can see that you hit the curbs is because your rims are taller than the curbs. Mm-hmm. And that's part of a man thing. Okay, I got big tires and wheels on
mine. Everything's a Boss 302.
Yeah.
She's in a minivan and she doesn't care. And it's like, you know, hey, you know,
the other day.
These handles aren't here for people to hang on for their dear life when you're making a corner.
The other day, we on our phones, we have Find Our Friends. So I keep track of her. So she left the ranch up north and she had to be at the office. And she made it there in an hour and 31 minutes. I have never made it there, and it's 93 miles. I have never, it's taken me an hour 50, an hour 55 minutes. And so I said to her, what's the deal?
Yeah, well, I leave at, you know, 4:45 in the morning. There's no traffic, so
there's still a speed limit. Those white signs that still say 65 miles an hour.
Okay.
But I'll tell you what she says to me. She won't do it now. She says, I just wait for the rabbit to pass me. And she says, and as soon as the rabbit passes me, I keep the rabbit in sight. I follow him.
Okay, so he wants to know between a 2.4 and
it doesn't make any
5.
Difference. You know what? The path of least resistance is let her pick the motor. Well, really and truly, the horsepower issue, you and I and 10 of my friends and 10 of your friends could not pick out the difference between the 2.4 and the 2.5. Okay. It's not going to happen. I think what I would do is the difference is going to be something to do with the exhaust, or it's going to be the injectors, or going to be the timing. There's going to be a difference because 1/10 of a liter is not going to make a doggone bit of difference. So
the one that has more horsepower is probably more satisfactory to her?
Yeah. If she likes the, if plan B is a 302 Mustang, then yeah, I would get the higher horsepower for her.
Okay. That's what I need to know. Thank you. I appreciate that.
All righty. Good enough. Thank you. And who was that? That wasn't
Peter.
Was it Peter?
Peter, yes.
Okay, so he had a second question. That's what fooled me.
Yes.
And then wife car. I'm going to need to do that. And who's next?
Glenn is next.
Glenn, good morning. How can we help you today?
Women in hot rods.
Watch out.
No, what's amazing to me is I see these new modern day muscle cars and they're more often driven by women.
That's right.
You
know, the Mustangs and the Camaros, etc.
I agree with you.
We have lots to do and places to go. So.
Yeah. And you know what? If I were a car maker, I would make a really high performance vehicle with a giant trunk that might fit four people in
there
it.
You
and
go.
That would be one that would sell.
Four. We need more than that.
Yeah. So, are you calling me just to get me in trouble, or
No. A quick, stupid question.
Okay.
Is it of any benefit to for preventive maintenance to use your electronic or your Freon dipstick to just recycle and clean the Freon from time to time?
I don't care what anybody else tells you. I'm going to change your question, Mark. You got a few cars in your fleet? Yeah, like 30. Those are shop trucks and rental cars and stuff like that. So the idea is, Mark, do you do that? And the answer is, hell no. There is no benefit whatsoever. Just do it when you need to do it. But to take it out, clean it, and run it through isn't going to make your car love you. So if you have another question, stay right there. I'm about 4 seconds from a break. 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 32 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. Let me just take care of some real business here. As I've told you before, I'm proud of all the shops on my best car repair shops list, and I wanted you to know that just not everybody can be on that. There is a very big filter that I control, and I can change because I'm the king and I make the rules. So the idea is I'm proud of these shops. Action Auto is one of those. I've known Tom since the late 70s, early 80s. He started his business in 1983. He's at I-17 in Deer Valley, northwest corner. He's honest, he's dependable, and he's a heck of a fisherman. He might even be a world-class fisherman. So if you want to talk fishing, find out if he's going to be there, and he'll sit in the lobby and talk fishing with you until you're all half a year older. So, but He also does all kinds of other good stuff to your car. He has ASC Master Certified Technicians, and they're very, very, they communicate really well with their customers. That's a compliment that I get about them a lot. So if you're near I-17 in Deer Valley and you don't have a shop, may I suggest you stop by Action and try them out for an oil change and see what happens. I know we've got, Glenn has got a second follow-up, and I'm all ears.
All right. I have a Toyota Tundra that I've noticed this tiny, tiny noise when I'm sitting in the driveway with the engine running, and I turn the steering wheel back and forth just a little bit, you know, till it picks up the slack left, pick up the slack right.
Right.
I just hear this tiny little in the somewhere.
In the steering column.
Yeah, it seems to be.
All right.
It could be under the hood. I'm not really sure, but it's a real tiny little noise, and I'm like, oh, geez, am I looking for problems?
Well, I think you got to find the noise before you answer that, and that's not going to be a hard one to do, because I think if you just push the steering wheel towards 12 o'clock and 6 o'clock and 3 o'clock and 9 o'clock as you turn the steering wheel back and forth, if the noise changes, then the problem's in the column. And if the problem,
yeah, there is no noise after, you know, just the taking up the slack left to right. There is no noise after
okay.
that.
Well, if anything's wrong with the front end, there'd be a click. Okay,
mm-hmm.
There'd be a thump or a click as we take up the slack in the tie rods and the center link and the pitman arm, you know, that kind of stuff. So
right.
If you're talking about a noise, it's probably going to be inside the steering column. And frankly, that's never going to cause a crash. and that's never going to be worth going in now after. But if you have to do a clock spring, then go in there and lube everything, that'd be fine. But unless it gets worse than just the noise that kind of is rubber or plastic rubbing on plastic or something like that, I wouldn't do anything with it. I would leave it alone.
Oh,
all
thank
right.
goodness. All right, I can sleep tonight. Thank you.
Oh, you betcha, you betcha. Yvonne, good morning. How can I help you?
Hi.
Hi.
I picked up a used 2006 Buick LaCrosse in August, and I took it into a shop, and I'm hoping that you would be able to recommend a good shop for me, because the shop I did take it to, they charged me $400, more or less. Well, and all I did was I asked them to change all the fluids because it was a used car and I wanted them all changed out so I'd know what I was dealing with in the future. But $400 was, let me see, all they did was change the wiper blades and the oil filter. And that was close to $400, so I don't think I'll take my car there ever again.
Well,
oh, and they did let me know that I needed a light replaced on my license plate, or else I'd get pulled over. I can't believe that they wouldn't have done that.
Okay. I don't understand the $400 for what apparently is some wiper blades and an oil change and a light inspection, so there's got to be more. But I want to tell you something. $400 is not a number that I can live with. The fluids, all the fluids is brake fluid, coolant,
yeah,
transmission fluid, engine oil. I that would have cost $1,000. If we're going to do all the fluids in that Buick LaCrosse, and then if it's an all-wheel drive, we've got a transfer case and a front and rear differential. So we've got 6-7 fluids in many of the new cars. It's expensive. So I think what needs to happen first is you need to get them to explain what the $400 was for. Now, what part of town do you live in?
I'm on the west side off 59th Avenue and Indian School Road.
Okay. I'd probably go to one of the S&S tires, tires and Peoria, Surprise, or Goodyear, and just take your receipt and just say, I'm looking to trust somebody. Would you look at this, and can you make any heads or tails out of this $400 ticket? And when I ask them for a fluid change. Now, most of us are good enough, and certainly S&S is good enough, to smell all those fluids, to look at all those fluids, and determine which one needs to be dealt with. We have equipment that will test brake fluid and coolant. We can also look at the color and smell it. Then the rest of the oils have an odor to them or a time frame to them, or instead of being amber, they're black. Those are the kinds of things that we look at. But S&S is capable of doing that. Now, if you want to go north from where you're at, you can go to Auto Dynamics up on Grand and 91st, and they certainly can help you as well.
Okay.
All righty.
And that'll be somebody that I can take my car to in the future for it.
Yeah.
Car repairs?
Yes,
sure.
They can do anything you want. You're just going to hold their feet to the fire, and you're going to look them in the eye and say, I don't pay for guessing, so if you diagnose
it as... Okay, well, I appreciate your show being on the air.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you, Vion. Thank you very much. And I'm going to write down TOT S&S. All righty, Rick, you're up next, buddy. How can I help you?
Yeah, I got a 2002 Ford Explorer, and I have a very slow coolant leak. It's probably been going on for like 3 or 4 months.
I've taken
it to the local shop, and twice they've replaced my radiator cap, and then another time they tightened up a clamp that was wrong, or was loose apparently. But every time I get it back within a week later, I check my coolant tank, and I'm down like a half an inch, and I'm kind of stuck with how to fix this. It's just a very slow coolant
Okay.
leak.
All right, hold on now. So the coolant, you've never found the coolant tank empty, but you're unhappy with the level, which is a half an inch less than what you're normally used to.
It'll keep going down. If I don't put like about a quarter to sometimes a half gallon in a week, it will go down to empty.
So it's completely empty.
It can be completely empty.
Okay. Well, that makes a big difference because it varies a lot. If I were you, I'd just fill it up all the way and see what happens. Because, I mean, it's okay. It's okay to fill it up all the way.
1 minute.
But you're going to move an inch or two of coolant back and forth. And I'm a little concerned that we've jumped to a coolant leak when we have just a movement of coolant. And the radiator cap is a good example. I mean, I would have done the radiator cap. That's a cheap guess. And pressure testing it, you look at the cap, and it says it's a 12-pound cap. You take the cap off. You put a pump on there. You attach it to the radiator. You pump it up to 12 pounds. You walk away. You come back 30 minutes later. If it's got 12 pounds in it, then what are we going to do now? But I think it's possible that we just need to fill that coolant jug up and see if we can maintain. When it gets empty, you got a leak. But if it doesn't get empty and we need to raise the level an inch or two, then all we've got is the movement, and you can't possibly look at the coolant overflow at the same temperature of every day and expect the line to be the same. So that line's going to move around a lot. But here's the most important part, empty. When it's completely empty, then we have an issue. Now, the only other thing it could be is you could have a combustion leak, and we could be aspirating water into the cylinder. That's not going to be anything that he's going to see external. That's not going to be anything he's going to be able to find external, but here's the symptom. The symptom is this. If, in fact, you have a head gasket or water being introduced to the cylinder, when you start it up first thing in the morning or when it's been sitting for a while, it's going to run kind of poorly. It's going to have a miss for about 30 seconds, and then it mysteriously goes away. And if that happens more than a couple of times, then we're going to probably be looking at some sealer to stick in there and see if we can control that without pulling the head off that's going to cost you $1,000 to $2,000. But I think you just need to have a fresh pair of eyes. So if I were you, I would just take it to somebody else and say, I have a coolant leak, or at least I believe I have a coolant leak. I want you to pressure test it, and I want you to do the very best you can to find out where that leak's at. By the way, take the oil cap off the valve cover and look at it. It should be dark brown or black. But if it's white, foamy, then we've got the coolant leak is inside the engine. And so by looking at the oil cap, you could determine that. I got to run. When we come back, we're going to take Bernie and Mark. I'll be back in a minute. Welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark Salem, and we're here helping you out with your car problems. Let me touch base, though, real quick with one of the shops in my list that I'm really proud of. That's Auto Dynamics. It's Sun City's largest and most trusted source for complete automotive services. Family-owned and operated since 1982. Chuck Nyday started. I've known Chuck since 1968. His son Derek now runs it. Derek is a protege any of us would be we'd be proud of and thankful for. He knows right from wrong, and he knows the difference between good service and bad, and he knows the difference between a good technician and a bad technician. So if you're anywhere in Sun City, then may I recommend Auto Dynamics. They're on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. So Grand and 99th Avenue, north and west, and you're home free. Let's go to Bernie. Bernie, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. I've got a right front wheel sensor code on my car. Usually when it's bad, it's like a pack rat eats the wires, but my wires are okay right now. If I replace my right front wheel bearing, will that take care of it, my hub bearing?
Well, if the hub is wobbling, then the answer is yes, and that is a common issue. So if you leave the tire on and you raise up the front end, I want you to compare the right front with the left front. So you grab a hold of the tire at 12 o'clock and 6 o'clock, and you rock back and forth, and then 3 o'clock, 9 o'clock, rock back and forth, and make sure both sides feel the same. While you're there, go ahead and spin those two front tires. You might have to put the transmission in neutral, and spin those tires and listen to see if there's any grinding going on in the wheel. The easier thing is go find somebody with a scanner. He's going to drive around the block, and he's going to see if the thing's talking or not. So, and sometimes you'll clear the code, and it'll take a few minutes for it to come back, and then you know it's a wheel bearing. So if you want to replace the sensor, go right ahead. They're not hard to do. And like you said, if the wiring is intact, then everything's good. But the sensor shouldn't have any metal around it. It's a magnet, but it shouldn't have a bunch of shavings around it. So if the last guy that did the brake job, you know, threw shavings all over the back of it, then that kind of creates the perception that the sensor's bad. But yeah, if you want to change it, go ahead. But it could be the wheel bearing. It could be dirty.
Well, I thought the sensor was in that hub bearing.
Okay, if it is.
That's where the wire comes out.
Okay, I don't know. There's just way too many cars for me to be able to pull that up. But if the hub bearing contains it, I don't know that I've ever seen where we had to replace the entire assembly, but I could be wrong, and I've been wrong before. So I think what you do is you order the you go on the internet and you look for a hub bearing and see for your car, and then you see if the wire comes with it and the sensor is embedded in it. And if that's the case,
it is.
Okay, then
it
I'm wrong.
Is. I guess replace the left one.
Okay. All right. Well, if you do, you already replaced the left one, then you know the answer to that question. And did you have a code on the left one?
No, I didn't. I just had an original bearing on there, and we were replacing the axle, and I figured I'd throw one on there while I was at it.
Okay. Well, the computer also, sometimes the computer doesn't tell us the truth. So you can replace the right side hub bearing, and if the computer's just a little confused, it could say, oh, it's a left front. Or if it's the right front, are you looking at the car from the front backwards, or are you sitting in the driver's seat, which is typically you're supposed to be sitting in the driver's seat. But there are some weird cars out there. You can do whatever you want. I just think that you should go in a little deeper before you start swapping out major parts, and especially if you have to do the hub bearing. But it's up to you. All righty?
I have a second code here for a catalyst. It's a P0420. It takes about 2 weeks and 800 miles to come back on after I clear it.
So you have a catalyst code?
Yeah.
Okay.
And, I had the battery disconnected a couple of weeks ago, and it took about 2 weeks, and I drive like 80 miles a day, so it took like 2 weeks for the code to come back on.
Okay. You're mistaken if you think I can diagnose the car by the code. I've explained that, you know, 100 times that first of all, we need to determine if the messenger is lying or if the cat is bad or if something underneath the hood is creating the perception that the cat is in the lean mode or the rich mode or something like that. So replacing parts based on the code is the worst possible thing anybody can do. Because I want to tell you, on a catalyst code, if you got a lean or a rich condition, 25% of the time we actually do the O2 sensors, and 75% of the time it's got a vacuum leak underneath the hood, the fuel filter's plugged solid, or any number of things. So the code just means the problem's in Ohio. You got to find the city, the street, and the house number. And that's what the diagnostic process does. If it's done right, that's what they diagnostic. So what you're saying is I clear the code, it still comes back. That doesn't help me diagnose it. That doesn't help me further the thing. And you tell me it's got a code and it's a catalyst code. Again, it can be caused by so many other things. So you might need to spend a little bit of money. Or if you want to guess, I can tell you this. Guessing's going to cost you more than the diagnostic will ultimately cost you. So you can go buy a bunch of O2 sensors or you can buy a new catalyst. It's going to cost you more than what a guy like me or in a lot of other shops in town would have charged you to diagnose it, which is typically on the low side, 65 to 75, on the high side, $1.50, somewhere around there. I got to move on. Mark, you're up next. How can I help you? Mark? Mark?
There you go. Yes, hello?
Yes, go right ahead.
Okay. Thank you for taking my call. I have a 2006 Chevy Impala, 130,000 miles. The car drives very well, no problems, until I come to a stoplight and a complete stop. With my foot on the brake, transmission in drive, the entire car starts to vibrate. Steering wheel, seat, dashboard, mirrors. If I shift into neutral, the vibration completely stops, or when the light turns green, I take my foot off the brake and the car starts moving, the vibration stops.
Okay. I think you have a bad motor mount. Okay. I want you to try a slightly different test. After you've warmed up the car and you've driven it or whatever, I want you to pull into Circle K or your work or wherever, your girlfriend's house, and I want you to just close your eyes, and I want you to put it in park and just let it idle and feel the car, eyes closed, then bring the idle up just a little bit and hold it steady, and I want you to do that in all the gears, park, reverse, neutral, drive, those four. And I think what you're going to find is that when you go to drive at idle, it may not be real obvious, but if you bring the RPMs up just a little, I think you'll get your vibration. Mm-hmm. Now, okay. It could be also in reverse, because you're coming up to a traffic light, and as you know, there's momentum forward, then the car rocks backward. So I think it's going to be a mount, and don't let anybody talk you into doing all four of them, just because if one of them's worn out, the other three aren't far behind. I am not a subscriber of that kind of BS.
Yeah, okay.
When I go in and replace your eyeball on your right side, I don't necessarily do the left side. and if you've got a hernia, I don't just go ahead and do all your hernia, all the possibilities. Although there's probably some doctors out there that are as bad as the auto mechanics, but I just don't see that's something that's in the customer's best interest. Now,
yeah.
Sometimes the labor on one is effective on the labor on another. So sometimes if you're going to be working in an area, they go, hey, the front and the back share 1.1 hours of time. Well, then it's different, okay?
Right.
It's going to be a savings, but doing them one at a time, they'll say, well, it's going to save you money. That's BS 99% of the time, because every single motor mount has its own labor and its own cost, and there's no overlap there. So word of warning, okay?
Thank you.
You betcha. All righty. I'm going to write down vibration and tell you. But, folks, our industry is really a good industry. There's lots of good guys out there, but there's bad guys out there. I'll tell you a quick story. A long time ago, I got a call from a lawyer, and he says, I'd like you to look at this particular case I've got. And I do that a lot. And so I look it over, and here's the story. The guy takes it to a transmission shop. And he describes this problem. He describes a problem like this. I'm driving down the road on the freeway, and all of a sudden it's as if somebody put the thing in first gear, because I go through the windshield, the car comes to a screeching halt, and it's in first gear. And they go, it needs to be overhauled. So he has them overhaul it. They tell him it's going to be X amount of dollars, and when he picks it up, it's a whole bunch more. But the guy needs it for his business. So he drives the car on the freeway, and guess what? It happens again. They take it back. They do some more work, charge him some more money. That happens three times. So he finally takes it to a Ford dealer, and they replace the transmission because they say, he doesn't know what he's doing, and you can't possibly have a good transmission unless it comes in a Ford box. And you know what happened next. It still did it. And so now this guy's bought two transmissions, and he's still got the original problem. So at this particular point, they take it back to the Ford dealer, and the Ford dealer says, oops, it's the wiring harness that has got on the exhaust, and it's shifting it into first gear at 60 miles an hour. And so now we've got this big finger point thing, the dealer's pointing at the independent. But the bottom line is this. The guy that ran the independent transmission shop was one of the worst bad guys our industry has ever seen in the transmission business, and he's just hopped around from place to place to place and opened up new transmission shops and tells everybody how great he is, but he's one of the biggest bandits in the whole wide world. And all he does is move around, and you better hope he doesn't get yours. He wouldn't have anything to do with it. So they sued him, and they won. Meanwhile, the dealership puts a new harness on, gives him the car back at no charge, and he says it's fixed, and then the dealership refunded the transmission work. So good for the dealership. They did what you're supposed to when you make a mistake. I've done that. I raised my hand. My guys are not without fault. There are times that they make dumb mistakes. I don't know how long ago, we're doing a work on a BMW that happens to be owned and operated by a guy I went to high school with. He leaves the shop. He's not even down the road two blocks and the tire comes off the back end. Well, his car's damaged. The tire hits another car. Her car's damaged. The wheel's damaged. All that stuff. So we tow it in. We fix it all up. Pay for everything. It's a mistake. We made a mistake. I carry a high deductible on my insurance because I get a better rate if I pay the first $1,000 or $2,000 or $3,000. I don't remember what it is. So I don't have a $25 deductible on what they call the garage keeper's liability. I've got a big deductible saying to them, I'll pay for the small stuff. Well, this wasn't a small thing, but I still paid for it. But we all have that. It's how you respond to that. I don't really fault the dealer because that's kind of good. But what he should have said was, you need to fix this. Because I'm not going to be really unhappy if it happens again. You need to be firm on your diagnosis. Well, they went, they said they did an in-depth analysis the first time, but then they said we did a double in-depth analysis the next time. When you get on the internet and you start looking for this kind of problem, buried deep is this little email and this little blog that says, well, sometimes this wiring harness, and they have a picture of it. And the wiring harness falls on the exhaust, and then it causes the transmission to go into first gear at 65 miles an hour, which is a hell of a ride. So those kinds of things happen, but it's how you respond and what you do. The dealership took care of the customer, put him back whole. They fixed the wiring harness, and they gave him his money back on the transmission. The first guy, who did a bunch of work twice, never fixed it, never admitted. When he was in court, he looked like an idiot, and the judge found against him. So it didn't take long, but it did take the owner of the truck an exorbitant amount of time, and he had to hire an attorney. So those are the kinds of things you want. It's with my shop and anybody else's shop. If you're going to use a shop, then just go in. I'll give you an example. You go in and you go, Salem Boys Auto Reviews. And you say, take Salem Boys Auto and put it in quotes. So we're looking for that string of three words. And then you go, reviews. That's what you need to look at. The other day I looked at some lady said I wanted to do business with this person, and I look up and I go, wow, they have 17 pages of reviews and 8 of the pages have 1 star. So more than half the people are giving them 1 star versus 5 stars. So you want somebody up there that's on a 1 to 5 star kind of setup. You want somebody up there that's 3.5 and better. So, you know, not all of us are going to be 5 stars, and I'm not a 5-star. You can go look at my stuff. There's some ugly complaints in there. There's a couple of them that I wish I had have never met. And there's a couple of them that I've offered what I thought was satisfactory, you know, here's, I'll fix this. And they said no, but then the Better Business Bureau said no, what he offered you is acceptable, or the bank said what he offered you is acceptable, and so forth and so on. And even to the extent if they'll arbitrate it at Yelp or any of those other places, then yeah, it happens. So we all have bad times. It's how you recover from them. So anyway, look up the shop that you're going to use and just make sure that they're historically that they've done what they're supposed to do. My email address is mark@marksalem.com. If you have a car question or a discussion, then just email me. Give me your phone number so I can call you. And mark@marksalem.com. mark@marksalem.com. Salem is spelled like the cigarette, and Mark is spelled with a K. God bless you. Wear your seatbelt. See you next week.